hell?
Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Unguarded shooting listeners, Almighty Ballin' listeners, you're listening to Almighty Ballin', but specifically the segment which you're listening to right now is Unguarded Shooting, and that means that I am joined by my luxurious and beautiful co-host, Michael Luxenberg. Michael.
Weird. Hey, everyone.
You can follow Michael at NL Surfboard, and you can follow me, Chris Axman, your other co-host, at Almighty Ballin, and you know, follow us, learn more about basketball, continue listening, and thanks for checking in today. Today is November 24th, or is it 23rd? We just watched the games from the 23rd, right?
We watched the games from the 23rd, I believe, and it is now the 24th Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, and you know, I think that it's fitting that Thanksgiving is the day after really a whole bunch of really great games.
Yeah, it was one of the better slates we've had this season, I think.
And so, anyways, we're going to start with the Cavaliers and the Blazers. So, nothing, I think, in this game happened that was out of the ordinary. It was a pretty boring game. Nothing spectacular happened. No one on the Cavaliers had a really stellar performance. Isn't that right, Lux?
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of chalk up what happened in the first quarter more to Mason or to whichever Plumlee than anyone on the Cavaliers, I think.
So Kevin Love had a mundane 34 points. Oh, wait, that's the second most points scored in a single quarter in NBA history.
And the most in a first.
Okay, so Kevin Love had 17 points in the first 4 minutes and ended with 40 points in 32 minutes and 8 for 10 from three. It was pretty stupid.
Yeah, I mean, the first quarter was bizonkers. I mean, it was, he was hitting shots, some of which were pretty impressive, but most of which were shots you expect Kevin Love to hit. And he just kept getting them.
But even after tonight, he's averaging, I mean, certainly the worst 3-point shooting in recent memory, only, let's see, 0.316 on the season, even after hitting 8 for 10 tonight. But, I mean, this is, we know that this is what the Cavaliers look like, a team that can score 137 on the Blazers, although, like you said, the Blazers are have a bit of a dearth in terms of a big man who can defend Kevin Love. But still, you know, when the Cavaliers are really humming, it's when Kevin Love is basically Ray Allen in big man form. And he's just running all over the court, really using his, I mean, he's got really good conditioning, you know, he's always been about, you know, doing push-ups and yoga and all that stuff. And I mean, that was on display tonight. He was just always moving, and Mason Plumlee had an even pinker face than normal because he just, like, couldn't keep up.
I mean, you saw Plumlee's face when he got taken out of the game about 5 minutes in after Kevin Love, like, burned him so bad he's going to have to hide in an opera house and sing sad songs for a while.
Yeah.
Like, he got torched for 17 in the first 5 minutes, and he was livid, and I think he was livid because he sort of knew that, like, he just got outworked for those threes. Like you said, Kevin Love was just sprinting around the court and beating Plumlee to the spots. Plumlee was, like, a step or two late on every closeout. When Plumlee wasn't covering him, he was shooting over dudes like Dame, or Dame was just late to get there. Like, he was just open from three.
Yeah.
Like, in perpetuity, and not entirely because of bad defense. Part of it's just, like you're saying, conditioning and hard work on Love's part. Like, he did a great job of getting himself into good spots, but there was just no one who could hang.
Yeah, no, and it really points out, although, you know, it is worth mentioning that really tonight was just a spectacular. It was a spectacular performance by Kevin Love. And I almost sounded a little bit like Austin Carr there because increasingly he just was totally unintelligible.
He was
spectacular.
He was legitimately losing it.
Kevin Love, Dirk doing the things.
Kevin Love is deep in the queue.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a spectacular individual performance, but it did put on display, it is worth mentioning, that the Blazers are having a really, really hard time transitioning away from their defensive scheme that they've had since Terry Stotts came, which is icing pick and rolls and going under and contesting with a big man. They've been switching a lot more this season, and they have yet to find a real good solution to how to play that. I mean, both in terms of people being able to finish at the basket, that was a big problem, but also in terms of, like, you know, if you're not going to switch and you're playing a team like the Cavaliers with all that off-ball movement and all those screens being set and just all that, if they're trying to make you switch and you're not good at switching, that hurts.
Right. I mean, we saw this, we covered the Clippers-Blazers game, right?
Maybe.
A couple episodes ago, I think. We covered a Blazers game, I think it was the Clippers. And
yeah,
they had the same problem where they just don't have the defensive, like, they just don't have the horses on defense, really, against teams that have several good scoring options. Like, at a certain point, you know, that switching defense is okay, but when it's Dame and CJ, who just aren't that big and aren't spectacular defenders, like, they put in the effort, but, like, there's only so much they can do, and you're going against, like, the Chris Pauls, Kyrie Irvings, LeBrons, Blake Griffins, DeAndre Jordans, Kevin Loves of the world, like,
right.
They just don't have the horses, and they'll put in the effort, but they'll just get, from time to time, they're just going to get burnt.
Yeah.
And that's what happened tonight in a huge way.
Exactly. And I mean, the Cavaliers, I think last year, the Warriors were clearly the best team at switching in the NBA. And even against the Cavs in the finals, they struggled because, like, there's only a couple of guys who can match up against LeBron, and, like, there is no one on the Blazers who can deal with LeBron. So, I mean, part of the problem is that, you know, Kyrie's going to beat Dame. He's also going to beat CJ because they're not good defenders, right? And he's going to beat Big Man, and he's going to beat Harkless. So, and then LeBron is also going to beat everyone. Like, they just, for a defense that's as poor as the Blazers have been so far this year, and they just can't square up against a team with the individual talent. Like, that's the worst possible thing.
Right. Like, I think the Blazers can go kind of blow for blow with a lot of these, like, sort of system-driven teams that you see in, like, the bottom half of the Western Conference. The Houstons, and who else is down there? Sort of.
This year they've really been struggling even against them.
Yeah, but I think that those are the conditions where that defense can work for them at least a little bit.
Yeah.
But teams that, like, don't need a system to maximize their talent, they just have an overwhelming amount of talent, obviously start out a step ahead, but, like, the Blazers really just can't do anything with that.
Yeah, I mean, what it is...
Like, the Lakers, the Rockets...
I think that they would have a hard time with Harden.
Yeah, I mean, they would. And they'd have a hard time with OKC, with Russ, too. But, like, I think those matchups are at least...
There's at least one...
Like, palatable for them. Right, there's one guy and the rest they can check. But when you get to these teams like the Warriors, the Clippers, the Cavaliers, the Spurs even, there's just, like,
too much.
Yeah. And they just can't handle it.
Yeah, and that's how Love went off.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's the, you know, you almost feel sympathetic for the Blazers because if you're going to let anyone score 34 points in the first quarter for you, like, it might have to be Kevin Love getting 8 for 10 from 3, right? Like, you can't just let LeBron squash you like a bug, and you can't just let Kyrie score off the dribble one-on-one against two of the worst guard defenders in the league. Like, we were talking about the Pacers so far this year, who, if they're not the worst defense, they're 28th, 29th. They have been pretty bad on defense so far this year, and they're in a similar position because just if you're going up against the point of attack against, you know, other point guards, and right now point guard is probably the most talented position in the league, and your point of attack is just being constantly crumbled because you're defending with Monte Ellis and Jeff Teague, you have to have some type of insane rim protector, and even then, you're probably not going to figure it out.
Right. I mean, you see, like, Miles Turner is developing his rim protector and, like, learning how to play the position, and, like, they're still giving him a ton of points, and he's still, like, getting bamboozled on a regular basis. Right. Like, and he's getting better, but it's because it's sure, like, even someone with all the tools to be a top-notch rim protector, like, in that situation, is still going to get beat pretty regularly until they get to that top threshold. And I think even, like, honestly, with that point guard combo, even if you put, like, a Whiteside or a Anthony right. Davis back there, like, you're still going to have interior defense issues.
We'll get to Anthony Davis later.
Yeah, we will. We certainly will.
I guess a few more things to touch on. Kevin Love is now, for the season, back averaging over 20 points, which is, I mean, if that continues, if he continues to average what he's averaging, which is around 21 points, it would be the first time in a Cavaliers uniform. So the first time since he was on the Timberwolves as the number one option that he averaged over 20 points, but he's also averaging a little bit over 11 rebounds, which would be the first time that he averaged double-digit rebounds. And I think that speaks to what it meant for the Cavaliers to win that championship last year. They trust Kevin Love. They were looking for Kevin Love. They were like, here, score 34 points in a quarter. I mean, LeBron said in a post-game interview, like, you know, well, once he started 6-for-6 from three, I knew something was happening, so I just tried to give it to him. And, like, I think that last year, LeBron would have been like, you're fitting out, you know, fit in Kevin Love, right? But now it's just like they have their identity, they trust Kevin Love, they are understanding now that, like, okay, if we're going to be a big three, if we're gonna win, it's going to be because we're a big three, not a big two, right? And if Kevin Love is going to be the big three, the third part of the big three, then we need to ride his hot hand and we need to hit him in the corner when he can't be defended.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Right, and I mean, we've talked about this, I think, a couple times before, that, like, good teams have sort of a plan A, a plan B, a plan C.
Unless you're the Warriors.
With the Warriors, you've got two more plans than...
You've got up to plan Y, because plan Z doesn't work.
Yeah.
Z for Zaza.
Right, no, I got it. We'll talk about that more, too. But with the Cavs, you've got, like, their kind of motion screen-based offense is plan A. You've got LeBron as dominating ball machine as plan B. You've got Kyrie as sort of individual scorer as plan C. And then down there, plan D, you've got Kevin Love on the spot up.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. Like, if he can play like this and continue playing like this, like, you're going to get that option pretty regularly within the course of a game to bail out possessions. If he can be hitting those shots and scoring like this, then, like, that's a whole different gear for this Cavaliers team offensively.
And by the way, we haven't even mentioned that LeBron had 13 assists and 31 points.
And 10 rebounds.
Right. So LeBron had another triple-double.
Yeah. And we also haven't mentioned that J.R. Smith passed Dirk for 15th on the all-time three-pointers list.
That's right.
Which is maybe the stat of the night.
J.R. Smith has hit more three-pointers than everyone except for 14 guys in NBA history. So do with that what you want.
Yeah, take that with your reality.
Yeah. So that's a thing. And also a thing is that the Spurs beat the Hornets 119 to 114, assuming that you're good to move on.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Awesome. So the Spurs won. Kawhi was 14 for 21. And I sort of saw this as a matchup of benches, you know? And I was thinking, the Spurs sort of try to slow it down with their lineup, right? And the Hornets, too, have historically been, you know, a more of a slowdown type thing. And then they have a high-powered offensive guy. You know, like, if you have Hawes and Kaminsky and Bellinelli all coming off the bench and, like, dropping tons of points, then, like, you can just keep things low-scoring in the starters' minutes and then go to your bench and blow them out of the water. Spurs do a similar thing with Patty Mills in the bench unit. And in that regard, the Hornets won the matchup. But The Spurs starters, though, +9 for Aldridge, +7 for Leonard, +10 for Gasol, +8 for Parker, and +10 from Danny Green. So the Spurs won the starters' minutes. So that was like not what I was expecting.
Right. I mean, I think the benches played close to a push. Maybe even Charlotte's bench might have even had a little bit of an advantage, especially in the second half. They had that really great run. But yeah, I mean, you saw when push came to shove, the veterans, particularly Tony Parker, stepped up in a huge way in the last couple minutes and turned the game around. Like, in the fourth quarter, the Charlotte bench, like, gave them a pretty strong push. He pushed them to lead, I think, for a second. Then Kemba started hitting just circus shots left and right.
Yeah.
And running Kawhi Leonard through forests of screens and getting to the rim. And it looked... It looked like the Hornets had figured out. I was calling them the Bobcats. The Hornets had figured out some real like a pretty decent strategy, a pretty decent solution to win this game with packing the paint, forcing the Spurs to shoot from outside, and just setting a lot of screens, letting Kemba go wild on the interior, and then somehow Spencer Hall's like took over the game for like 4 minutes of the block and several points. Like,
yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that was weird. But they had things going on, and then. At the end, the Spurs just were the Spurs and, like, needed a basket, got a basket. Needed a stop, got a stop. Needed a turnover, got a turnover. Needed another basket, Tony Parker hits a corner three. Like,
yeah, and let's talk a little bit about that play. So, down late, the Spurs closed it out, made it a 5-point lead with 30 seconds left. And I was making the point initially that down late, the Spurs play a lot of triangle-esque type stuff. And what I mean is that they play two guys off to the side, and Kawhi is sort of the Michael Jordan slash the Kobe, right? And then they have these two bigs who are playing in a high-low game, you know, sort of playing horns, basically. And we were trying to figure out because, like, you know, it was the game was on ESPN and League Pass is broken. We were trying to figure out where the hell Danny Green came from because... whether or not Danny Green was in the opposite corner, like the weak side corner, that eventually they ended the play with, you know, an overloaded strong side where Danny Green was on the other side. It was on the left side of the court. So was Powell. So was LaMarcus. And so was Tony Parker in the corner who hit the three. And I thought that Danny Green came from one side, but, I mean, we still don't know. I mean, went to League Pass. It's like a mystery.
It's an unsolvable mystery. Actually, I think that the more I think about the way the play went down, and given what we know about the Spurs, I'm not even sure that the way that play went down is what they wanted. I'm not sure that corner three from Tony Parker is what they wanted. I actually think, just looking at it more, that it looked like they were almost ISOing Kawhi, like setting up an ISO for Kawhi.
Well, but
like
that's
giving
that's
Kawhi that weak side. Right, that weak side access. But... then, you know, the flash to the high post from Gasol kind of turned around Green's defender and got him lost, and then Parker had a wide open three in the corner.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if we'll ever actually get to know what that play was supposed to be because...
League Pass is garbage.
These packages are garbage, and Tony Parker just popped before I think that play was even finished developing.
Yeah. And, it worked well. And, I mean, I think that there's perhaps a best-case scenario for plays... A lot of the time, you know, the best plays, like, don't have a singular, okay, this is what's going to happen.
Right.
The best plays have multiple outcomes. It's like a pick-your-own storybook, you know?
Yeah.
And the story that they picked was a corner three from Parker, which was not the worst possible thing that could have happened for the Spurs, you know?
No,
and,
I mean, he's not an amazing three-point shooter, but, I mean, a corner three from anyone competent is still a pretty solid outcome for a play.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, one of the main stories, I think, from this game is... Danny Green quietly put in a 4-for-7 three-point shooting performance, which is, after last year shooting 33% and having a very down year, it's a big deal that he's now up to 37.5, especially considering that he was injured at the start of the season, and the fact that transition isn't taking a long time and he's starting to look like an elite three-point shooter again is such a huge deal for a Spurs offense that could use the space.
Well, it's that, and then the other big story, or one of the other big stories tonight, is the David Bertans, you know, coming out throwing exclamation points around with a 3-from-3 from 3-point range, a big dunk, and a Mondo block.
Yeah.
And I know you were talking to someone from some Spurs reporter.
Yeah.
About
I had a recent episode. It was is it time to bench Tony Parker? That episode was with Jeff Garcia of News4SA and the host of Locked On Spurs. So yeah, I got to the end of the episode and yeah, we talked about, is it time to bring Tony Parker off the bench, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but you know, actually part of the reason why we talked about that is because their spacing was poor. And now that Danny Green is back and hitting threes, that's a big deal. Anyways, what he said at the end of the interview, when I asked him, hey, Jeff, which young guy who they added this year, because, you know, with Tony Parker, I mean, with Tim Duncan gone, you know, they added a bunch of young talent from overseas and otherwise. And he was like, I think you know who I'm going to say. It's Bertans. And I was like, whoa, I really thought that you were going to say, bad at proper nouns, man, the Dwayne Dedman. Yeah, I thought that he was going to say Dwayne Dedman, but he said, no way, Bertans. Like, I think that people don't realize that right now he is an NBA player and he still has a lot of upside.
Yeah, I mean, I liked everything I saw from tonight. His shot looked good. He ran the floor real well. He played good. He played solid defense and even was pretty great getting across from the weak side to help out on stuff.
Yeah.
He looked like a real player. And like the stretch when he was really playing, when he was really balling out in the third quarter, like he was a difference maker for that team. Like that, they were struggling with some stuff Charlotte was doing, and he really kept them in the game for a stretch when they otherwise might have been floundering.
Yeah, and that spacing is going to be so vital for them going down, you know, as they develop. I mean, I think that, you know, now that you have this guy who, by the way, was 4-for-4 from field goal, 3-for-3 from three-point line, and had, you know, 11 points and a block.
And such a block. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, now...
Is it like Zeller he met at the rim and just tossed his cookies?
Tosses. I don't remember who the block
was. It was either Zeller or Hawes. It was one of those bulky white boys in the Hornets, and he got rocked at the rim.
Yeah, so, and, I mean, he, by the way, didn't have any rebounds tonight, didn't have any assists or steals, but he was still, you know, one of the more, in only 11 minutes, he had one of the better performances off the bench, scoring the most out of any bench scorer, and, you know, really... I think it's going to be important to have another big man. You know, I think that what the Spurs are probably going to figure out is, you know, hopefully we can make it so Powell and LaMarcus are a good two-man tandem. But if we can stagger them with Bertans, who spreads the floor, then that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And another element that he brings to this team is just a little more speed, in terms of like straight-line speed up and down the court.
Yeah, he's quick.
He runs the floor really well, and you look at this roster, and like LaMarcus ain't doing that. Like Kawhi runs the floor well, because Kawhi does everything well. Pau Gasol ain't running the floor. Tony Parker ain't running the floor. Green is admittedly great about it. Lee is not running the floor. Ginobili's not running the floor. Like Anderson's not running the floor. Like you can't even make a full five man lineup of the dudes on their team who I'd be like stoked on running it fast. No, actually, yeah, you can. You can make exactly a five man lineup. Of Patty Mills, Jonathan Simmons, Bertans, Green, and Leonard. And that's huge. The game tightens up in the playoffs and slows down, but that just makes those fast break points, those opportunities are on the floor that much more critical.
Right.
And having players who are willing to and able to do that makes a tremendous difference.
Yeah.
And so Bertans being another one that they can bring off the bench who runs the floor well. That fast break that he finished was really a thing of beauty with him and Simmons, and I think it was Ginobili running it, and it was fantastic.
Well, what I think is really awesome and really smart on Pop's part in terms of the way that he's constructed this bench is that most teams, their bench unit is younger than their starting unit, considering, or if a team is contending, then normally that's the case, right? Like the Warriors are bringing like McAdoo and McCaw and Ian Clark, all these young guys off the bench and developing them so that, you know, in the future they can step in for their vets who get older and fall out of the starting spots, right? And so the Spurs are doing that too, right? And their bench unit runs really fast, shoots a lot of threes, while their starting unit grinds it down and like scores inside, outside, you know, all these different ways. And I think the reason why the difference of styles between their bench unit and their starters, right, sort of demonstrates that Pop knows where the game is headed, right? It's headed towards spacing the floor, like, you know, 3-and-D, run and gun, all of that stuff. So he's constructed this young bench, right, that is eventually going to be starters. So the cycle is going to continue, and when they're the starters of the future, Bertans is going to be shooting tons of threes, and, like, you know,
yeah,
Patty will be shooting tons of threes, and Kawhi shooting tons of threes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. As far, and then to take things back to the Hornets side of things for a minute, this game did feature sort of a quintessentially Hornets-y box score where they had 8 players in double figures, but only one who scored more than 15. Which I think is interesting that's sort of their way. The yeah. Hornets' way is this yeoman style, like German 15th century commune sort of, like everyone puts in their work, kind of setup. And it's interesting because it makes them kind of hard to blow out.
Yeah.
Just in that, like, they don't need, it's not one thing you can really take away. It's, they don't have anything. Kemba can take over a game, that's about it on their side, but at the same time, it's hard for them to deny all of their offensive options.
Yeah.
And that makes them kind of interesting. Like, Williams had 10, Kidd-Gilchrist had 10, Hibbert had 10, Walker had 26, Batum had 13, Hawes had 11, Kaminsky had 13, Sessions had 7, Bellinelli had 12.
Yeah.
Like, they have just such a balanced roster, and I think they did such a good job, for the most part, of playing to that balance. I think the parts of the game where that got away from them were the parts where Bellinelli was, like, hunting for his own shot, where Hawes, like, couldn't come to terms with the fact that maybe the, like, 6 points in a row he scored might have been, like, a little bit fluky, and kept trying to put the ball up and turning it over. But when they stay in that sort of, like, it doesn't matter who's scoring as long as the team is scoring kind of mentality, they end up being really strong because, like, those are all pretty good players as far as putting the ball in the basket in their respective ways.
Right. And then the coach, Steve Clifford, runs a capable defensive system. So it's like, if you have good scorers and a good defensive system, balanced all around attack, you
good
know,
things are going to happen.
Right. Yeah. And that's really the Spurs approach too, right?
Yeah.
Like they spread the wealth, they rely on their bench. They've had the best bench unit in the league, like, every year for, 300 years or so. You know, that's the Spurs way. And that's why I said at the start of talking about this game, you know, I figured that this game would come down to a battle of benches, right? And it really didn't, because the Spurs starters are just more.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Talented. And then the bench, it was a draw, basically.
Right. So that's, like, the big difference in Spurs and the Hornets, right? Is that the Hornets have this incredibly balanced attack that's, like, really well managed, precisely to make up for their lack of top-line talent. Whereas the Spurs have a strategy organized similarly to maximize the top-line talent that they have.
Right, and that's right. What the Clippers have done so far.
The Clippers as well. The Warriors, even to an extent, the same thing.
Well, the Warriors
are their own.
Yeah, they don't have any bench units. They just have, like, one of the starters carrying the load, and then, like,
Patrick McCaw is there.
Yeah, they have, like, rotations rather than bench units.
Yeah, last year,
they're 73-win team. That's largely what they did.
Yeah, it's just this idea that the Hornets have this really great system that spreads the wealth around, and it makes up for sort of their lack of all-NBA caliber players. Whereas,
although Kemba is going to be.
Kemba is going to be in the discussion for sure. Whereas the Spurs play this really balanced offense because it creates opportunities for Kawhi and LaMarcus to be all-NBA caliber players.
Right.
And the end of this game, particularly Kawhi and LaMarcus, the end of this game, sort of articulated through their play that difference.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Really, they were force-feeding those two guys, and it worked, you know? Like, I mean, Kawhi Leonard has been scoring a lot more than he ever has. A couple of games ago, he had his career high. I think it was like 34 points or something.
Weren't
like
they?
That.
I think that on the broadcast, Colin said that Kawhi had like 4 30-point games in his career before the season. He's had like 4 or 5 so far this year.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, the numbers.
I mean, that sounds right. Like,
yeah, I may have gotten the numbers wrong, but just being that he's taken a substantial leap as far as his ability to carry a scoring load.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that on display again tonight, where like when they needed baskets, they went to Kawhi, and when Kawhi couldn't score he was able to find other players who could.
But also, you know.
But also, he did.
Well, but like they did a similar thing with LaMarcus as well.
Yeah, LaMarcus wasn't as good about finding other guys because he's not always that good about that. But
yeah,
he did get the ball and he like pounded it in the block and he went up and got free throws.
Mm-hmm.
And he put in work down low for sure.
I mean, it's like this has been the case for a while, right? It's Kawhi's team and it's LaMarcus Aldridge's team. I would actually say that it's a 1A, 1B, not a 1-2 thing, you know? Like John Wall and Bradley Beal. But yeah, I mean, like
that's more of a 3A, 3B thing.
But like they treat those two guys like number one options on any given possession.
Right. Well, I think that the Spurs, and I mean, again, like so much of this is another testament to Greg Popovich being like on such a different level of coach wisdom. But they're really good at adapting to what the other team does poorly. Like if a team has really strong interior defense, it becomes a Kawhi-centric offense. If a team has really strong perimeter defense, it becomes a LaMarcus-centered offense.
Mm-hmm.
And like they're really good at being like, okay, tonight's a LaMarcus night. And LaMarcus night doesn't necessarily mean that LaMarcus is the top scorer, but it means that LaMarcus is where their offense like is the primary threat of their offense that make breaks up the defensive rotations and creates the space they need to like create dribble drives, create points.
Yeah.
And if their perimeter defense is weaker, then Kawhi takes that role.
Yeah.
And I think they're really, really good about noticing early on in games what kind of night it is and executing accordingly.
Yeah. And, well, I think that is good coaching.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's just popping on like another level. Like, you know, the Thunder, during the halcyon days of the Russell and Kevin Durant partnership, like, had a really hard time with that, right? Because there were games where it's like, Russ should be the one in charge tonight. Whether it's because of the bad point guard defense or strong wing defense or like the nature of the teams they're playing against.
Are you trying to say that Scottie Brooks isn't a great coach?
I'm not just trying to say that. I think that's what I'm exactly saying.
But he's done so well with the Wizards.
All right. Let's talk about the next game.
Yeah, no, it is about time to talk about the next game. So the next game we're talking about is really another spectacular game. These were great. These were great games.
Yeah, these were fun.
So Anthony Davis carried the Pelicans to a win over the Minnesota Timberwolves, which...
who gave them a lot of help.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, 17 for 27, 2 of 4 for 3, but those two threes were just freaking daggers.
Wait, wasn't he 3 of 4? Did they take one of those away? I guess one of those was a 2.
Yeah, but so, yeah, 2 of 4 from 3, and they were just like... The reason why they were such dagger threes, though, is because he was just killing them inside, and then it's like, okay, we're really gonna stop him from scoring in the paint, and then he just goes out to the three-point line and nails, like, I think they were both consecutive in a row, and it just... This was a matchup, or it was sold as a matchup. We went into the game.
Yeah, we picked this game being like, this will be cool, Karl Anthony Towns versus Anthony Davis, plus Andrew Wiggins should be able to feast on this perimeter defensive failures.
Yeah, Dante Cunningham played 42 minutes the other night. Like, you know, I can't wait for Wiggins to light up Cunningham.
And that's just so not what we got. Like, the Towns was 4 of 11 with 11 rebounds and 9 points. Wiggins was 2 of 19... For 13 points.
2 of 19. He was 9 for 10 from the line.
Yeah, but that's like, that means Wiggins and Towns basically combined for a little less than Wiggins' average on the year.
That's not good. That's not how you win games.
That's real, real bad. And
I'm not sure if I mentioned, it was 117 to 96, so they won by 21 points.
21, yeah.
Yeah.
And Davis just like dominated the game from start to finish. Like, this is supposed to be sort of this, like, can't Carl Anthony Towns challenge Anthony Davis for, like, best young center? It's like,
nope.
Like, decidedly not. Like, this dude. And it's not just that he was hitting crazy shots and playing really good defense and getting rebounds. Not that he wasn't. He was doing all those things. But there was one play in particular that kind of blew my mind and kind of cemented, like, why Anthony Davis is just so great. Which is, so last night against the Hawks, Anthony Davis left the game early because he dove into the seats after a loose ball and hurt his knee. In the second quarter of tonight's game, there was a loose ball, and Anthony Davis promptly dove into the seats and saved it for some points and a fast break, and came back into the game and did it, like, with no hesitation. And you see, like, the leader of this team, the top scorer, the dude who is, like, some, like, has suffered injuries and has been suffering through, like, having no supporting cast around him, and he is busting his butt to get every loose ball and to make this team win, and that is just, like, that is tremendous.
Well, and that's sort of, I think that, you know, he was so demoralized in those first few games. Like, I remember when they got their first win, which wasn't that long ago. after, you know, the buzzer sounded and the Pelicans won the game, Anthony Davis went over to Tim Frazier and just gave him this hug. And it was like the type of hug that you, like, give, like, your grieving mother or something like that. Like, he was just like, oh God, we finally did it. We finally crossed this finish line. So, you know, I think that Anthony Davis was just like, well, screw this team, right? And he was having a great individual season, no doubt. Like, you know, triple doubles every night, 40 points, 50 points. But what has changed over the last four games for the Pelicans, and the reason why they've won the last four games, is Drew Holiday's back, but, I mean, he didn't have a stellar performance tonight. But, like, crucially, Anthony Davis is not just scoring, not just rebounding, not just getting blocks. He's doing everything.
Yeah, and I think that he's also, whether it's something Gentry's been saying to some of the young guns or something that Davis has done to inspire, like, to prove further trust in them, or maybe it's Drew's presence in the locker room or something, but over those four games, like, Frazier's been playing great. Moore's been playing well. Even Oshik's been, like, all right.
Oshik's been all right, yeah.
And, like, it just seems like they're, it seems like someone's, like, Revenge of the Body Snatcher is just, like,
and hey,
swapped the brains out of these cats, because, like, Tim Frazier was fine, but now he's, like, top 10 in assists in the NBA per game.
Well, yeah, but, like, Ishmith on the Pelicans last year did that.
Yeah, I mean, sure, someone has to pass Anthony Davis the ball.
But Ishmith was a plus, or not Ishmith, Tim Frazier was second on the team in plus minus. By the way, that was a plus 30, and Anthony Davis was plus 33, so there's that.
And, yeah, I mean, Tim Frazier, the thing with Tim Frazier is, like, he led the team in assists, he hit some threes, he also led the team in, like, balls chucked 5 feet behind the dude they were supposed to go to and then into the stands.
Five turnovers.
Yeah, like, he, and some of them were ugly.
Yeah.
But
he's not a starting point guard.
He's showing some real flashes of, you know, like, obviously it's the D League, but when someone wins Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same season, like, even in the D League, that's, like, fairly meaningful.
Sure.
And I think that's showing that, like, this guy, that he can play, and that, like, whatever it is that's, like, giving him a little bit more renewed faith in himself and in his game is showing up, you know, on the court, and they're winning games that they, you know, earlier in the season would decidedly have lost.
Yeah, no, and I, you know, I actually think, before I touch on the other reason that I think the Pelicans are having a bit of a renaissance over the last four games, I do want to say Terrence Jones, 7 for 10 field goal, 7 rebounds, 17 points, a steal and a block, and an assist. I mean, Terrence Jones, man.
Like, I mean, he can play. And
like,
I think
he's another one of those reasons why the Pelicans have had this renaissance. Like, he has been averaging, I think, you know, near 17, 18 points over the last four games.
And I mean, yeah, and I'm not sure that comes from, I mean, you know, part of me thinks that Davis just, like, did something.
Well, it's like, you know what it is I think when Terrence Jones is out there, and this is something we talked about with Mason Ginsburg, shout out Verified Mason Ginsburg.
Oh, yeah,
Verified. Oh, shout out Verified Oliver Maroney, too. You
know? Oh, yeah, I saw that. Congratulations, Oliver.
So, you know, one of the things we talked about with Verified Mason Ginsburg is, you know, if you have Terrence Jones out there instead of Omer Asik, right, and you have Etuan Moore, And you have, you know, Drew Holiday, although Tim Frazier was playing this role tonight. And I guess, you know, Solomon Hill can't shoot threes. But the point is, you know, Terrence Jones, right, is like someone who can spread the floor in a real way. And that's that means that you have Terrence Jones, Anthony Davis was hitting from three. You know, Frazier and Drew can both shoot threes. You have this really well spread floor when Terrence Jones is out there with Anthony Davis, because both of your big men can shoot from outside, and the offense just starts humming.
Yeah, and wasn't... Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, I don't know how majorly insignificant this is, but I think Terrence Jones played with Davis in Kentucky, right?
Yep. I mean, that's... I mean, he said that he got bigger offers, or his agent said. It is reported... Anonymous sources indicate.
Sure.
Sources say, right, that he got bigger offers from other teams, but he wanted to go to the Pelicans to play with his former teammate.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, before, the season before last, right, the year that Anthony Davis was, the whole reason why last season we all expected Anthony Davis to, like, eat the whole league and, like, you know, walk away having devoured every basketball player in the world. Was there was not just talk about how great he was as a player, but also how great he is as a leader and like this like locker room figure, and he's inspiring and courageous and well spoken, and everyone loves him.
He's got a unibrow.
And he's got a good unibrow, and I mean Terrence Jones, like that story is a testament to that. And I think that you're right that he was demoralized early in the season, but now seeing him like pumped up and full of fire, I think is like having the inverse effect where like.
Well, so where did Terrence Jones come from? Did he come from a team that maybe had some chemistry issues and maybe he would be demoralized? Terrence Jones playing for the... What team last year?
Gosh, I don't...
He played for the Houston Rockets, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how do you... Like, every single person in that locker room last year was just totally miserable. So, like, I think it's interesting, right? It's a little bit like the David West thing, you know? Like, David West was like, screw the Pacers... You're going to do my boy like this, Hibbert, right? Like, this place is cancerous, and I want to just go to the Spurs, right? And then after that, I want to go to the Warriors. But it's a little bit like that, right? Like, Terrence Jones was just like, forget this. I'm going to go in on, I don't think it was a total minimum, but like $2 million a year. I'm going to go to the Pelicans and play somewhere that at least I know I'm going to enjoy it.
Right, and I mean, you know, I obviously am just a big advocate of fun in general. But I do think there's a certain value in enjoying playing basketball, like as a tangible on court, like has tangible on court ramifications. Like the Warriors at their best last season were clearly having a great time.
Yeah.
Same with this year. And I think that when you have a team that's having a good time playing together and like enjoys feeding off each other and specifically enjoys seeing other players on the team do well.
And other teams lose.
Well, sure. I think that's meaningful, and I think we're seeing that with the Pelicans in a way that we definitely weren't seeing first seven games.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Season.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, so let's run down a few more things, and then we can go on to what was surprisingly the biggest blowout of the game. So the Timberwolves' third quarter woes continue.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty close game in the first, second, and fourth quarters. Big surprise there, but then they had 18 points in the third and allowed 36. They're not good at third quarters. I don't know what it is, yeah, but like
it's inconceivable how consistent this trend is.
Yeah, no, it's in their heads. Like it is. I think that it has demonstrated itself to not be a statistical fluke, and it's just in their head.
Like, okay, so in the first half they were struggling with interior defense. But also the Pelicans are hitting some shots that, like, maybe you can kind of assume they won't hit all the time. And it looked like as long as they can, like, get their interior defense a little tighter and keep challenging offense, they'd have a good shot at this game. Then all of a sudden, they like stopped playing transition defense.
Defense was so bad.
They were leaving open passing lanes from the top of the key
taking
to the block.
Taking dumb shots.
Taking bad shots, giving up shovel passes, giving up offensive rebounds. It was like all of a sudden, everything they'd been doing well in the first half just went out the window. And they just got train wrecked. And it happens every night.
Yeah.
It happens every single game. The third quarter, like, they stop doing stuff.
Yeah. And I just, you know, want to put this out there. You know, once you come out the gates in the third quarter, you put your starters back in.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. So Ricky Rubio was minus 31, 0 for 2, and minus 31. His plus minus was a minus 31. Meanwhile, Chris Dunn was the only player on the Timberwolves with double-digit positive plus minus. He had 10. But like everyone else was either negative or I think there was 1-0. He got 4 steals, 4 rebounds, 4 crucial steals, and played great defense. And Rubio, like, didn't pass well, right? Didn't score well, didn't defend well. He did not have a good night.
I mean, to be honest, the point guard position in Minnesota is becoming increasingly clearly a problem.
Right.
For that team.
Because Chris Dunn is I'm happy with Chris Dunn playing minutes on a team. 20 minutes, maybe. You know, like 15 minutes.
And Chris Dunn could become a solid point guard, but he's not. He's decidedly not that good right now.
And regardless of whether or not Ricky Rubio is, you know, regardless of who's better, Chris Dunn or Ricky Rubio, Ricky Rubio's not a starting point guard. At least not in this team construction. I mean, like, he's a playmaker who has a poorly spaced, kind of clunky offense with young guys who aren't going to be in the right places all the time, who aren't going to... I mean, like, if he's making bullet bounce passes, like, you want, like, veterans and guys who know what's about to happen and not what you have right now.
Well, I think the other thing... I think along the same lines, the Timberwolves... Like, you think of Ricky Rubio, and then you think, oh, this dude gets the ball around, so having a bunch of players who can shoot and finish around him means instantly it's going to be great. But the thing with the Wolves is that Towns can shoot, Levine can shoot, Wiggins can shoot, even Jang can shoot a little bit. But they're not spot-up shooters, right? Like, they...
I think Levine...
They can shoot spot-ups, but they're not spot-up shooters in terms of, like, that's not their primary... Like, Levine loves to cut and get the ball off the dribble and drive. And like,
well, he doesn't shoot off the dribble, though.
He does. He shoots those pull-ups. He shoots more pull-up twos than threes, but he shoots pull-ups. He had a couple nice ones tonight.
I mean, okay, but anyways, like, finish your point.
Yeah, they're not spot-up shooters by nature. And so when Rubio's just dishing to these dudes, they then want to dribble and do stuff with the ball.
Wiggins, that's true about it. But he's getting better, but tonight he was not.
And it's true with Towns, too. Like, Towns wants to maneuver the ball.
Yeah.
Levine wants to, is getting better, you're right, getting increasingly more disciplined about not doing that, but he still does it fairly regularly.
Yeah. From inside the perimeter.
Yeah.
For sure.
Dang. Well.
Dang's a spot of fear.
Yeah. But also with very limited range.
He
shoot out the game to like 18, maybe 20.
Yeah. Right.
But the point is that, like, Rubio's inability, like, they don't really spread the floor the way you'd think a team that can shoot as well as they can could spread the floor. Because they're running around and moving defenses around, which is fine, except that the point guard they have isn't, like, the exact point guard who's not built to take advantage of that sort of, like, internal chaos they create on the defensive end, or on the offensive end.
Right, yeah. And I mean, we've seen time and time again, right? It's like, if you have a superstar, or two superstars in the Timberwolves, you know, position, I mean, like, Anthony Wiggins?
Are you gonna say Anthony Weiner? Like Carlos Danger?
Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins is, like, you know, maybe not a legit superstar, but he certainly looks that way. He's like 20.
He's getting there. For
he's
sure.
A superstar scorer at the very least, right? And then Carl Anthony Towns, I think that the world is collectively falling in love with him. If you have these guys, you want the ball in their hands, right? I mean, like, really what you want out of a point guard is, like, someone who can knock down threes and, like, be Derek Fisher, right? Like, be a guy who just is going to, like, you know, you want to have catch and shooting at your point guard because, like I was saying before we started the game, Anthony Weiner, Andrew Wiggins is running in the pick and roll with Karl-Anthony Towns really well. And Karl-Anthony Towns also wants to create off the dribble, right? And, like, Zach LaVine is good at cutting to the basket, right? So, like, you want – what would complement this team best is, like, a spot-up shooting point guard who fit within the offense and doesn't drive it, because you have Anthony Wiggins and you have Karl-Anthony Towns to run
Andrew
the offense.
Wiggins. It's Andrew Wiggins.
Oh, right, Andrew Wiggins. You have Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns to run the offense, and, like, you should just have a point guard who just, like, takes his when it's there and doesn't gunk up everything.
Right, well, you want a point guard who can initiate the offense, and then once the ball is in the superstar's hands, be moving around the perimeter to find and finding cracks in the defense.
Yeah, but I mean...
But that's not what you got with Rubio.
Right. Saying, like, it would be huge for them if they had, like, a real sniper at the point guard position, because it would just give those two guys that little bit more space to create for themselves.
Right, exactly. Well, that's exactly, like, you have these three dudes, because I include LaVine in this too.
Sure.
Who are all capable of generating offense and are pretty good passers. Wiggins, less so, but all capable passers who can score for themselves and are pretty decent reading the floor. Having someone who will just dribble around and try to make the assist right away, like the Rubio does, doesn't help in that situation. It's just not the way that they play. If they had someone, I'm trying to think of, like, a good example of the kind of point guard this would be.
Well, young Derek Fisher.
Sure, like Derek Fisher the on the Derek Fisher talent. On the Jazz, right? Like,
or no, Derek Fisher, or like Fisher on. He was on the
when he was on those old Lakers. When he was on those,
right,
yeah,
yeah, that's what I mean. Like you have your superstars, right? Like Kobe can go create. Like Pau Gasol can go create. Like, you know, Bynum is going to do his Bynum thing, right? You have that. You just want a guy who, like you said, is going to, like, vaguely initiate the offense on certain possessions, right? And is just going to catch and shoot threes. Because, like, and like Wiggins should have the ball in his hands. You're misutilizing your superstar by running everything through
Rubio.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Major League Rubio apologist, but I do tend to agree that, like, it just doesn't look like it's working with him.
I don't think it's a good fit.
And yeah. Then the problem is that, like, it doesn't work with Tyus Jones either, and it doesn't work with Chris Dunn either, and it's a real... It's going to be this thing where it's like, the starting lineup of this team seems like it's pretty amazing, but then the point guard position is just, like...
Well, and also, it's worth mentioning that, like, Jang continues to be an issue. He was just letting them have everything.
Yeah,
blowing, I mean, rotations.
Jang's a sub-excellent defender, but...
Now, he's not, like, a bad defender.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the center on that team, and they're, like, one of the worst defenses in the league.
Well, they're doing better now. I think they're up to 14.
Maybe. They didn't look good tonight.
They certainly did not.
So, yeah. Let's see. Last couple of things I wanted to touch on is Lux. Like, I feel like I really am a guy who, when I'm right, will spike the football, you know, like do a little victory dance.
Yes.
And so I feel like it's only right karmically that I say you were so right about Solomon Hill, and I'm sorry everyone for leading you astray.
Yeah, I mean, Solomon Hill, it's like he had some good...
No, he doesn't do anything good.
Well, he had some good stretches, I was going to say last year, the year before, but, like, yeah, it's...
Are you looking something up right now?
Yeah, I was checking team defense stats. Yeah, Minnesota is, I think, 14th, just below league average.
Does that count tonight?
I'm not sure how updated this is.
Okay, I mean, they've certainly gotten better, which is what you would sort of expect from, like, a young team that has a brand new coach. But, I mean, tonight, at least, you know, it's like Thibodeau teams should be able to shoot poorly, which they did. That's a thing. Like, if they had hit all their shots, like, by the way, they shot 17.6 from three.
Yeah, I mean, so
that's not
garbage. Great.
But, like, a Thibodeau team, you would hope, would win that game by... I mean, they had 96 points. They, like, sort of got it done, right? Like, if they had... They
a lot of those points were garbage time points, dude. Don't...
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Don't sleep on garbage time.
Well, yeah, whatever. So anyways, they got their points, not as many points as they're used to, but I mean, you would hope that a team like this would be able to win with their defense every once in a while, but that is very much so what did not happen. And it's like, you can't shoot as poorly as they did. Again, like 17.6 from three, and also allow the Pelicans to shoot 54.2% from three, and also allow Anthony Davis to go off for 45 points. Like, that's not good. Very last thing before we move on. Buddy Hield, 0 for 7 from the field, including 0 for 4 from deep.
Yeah, that was another one guy you were excited about that did not.
Oh, did you see that Jamal Murray the other night went off for 24?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked great.
Yeah, he's maybe starting to come around.
He is starting to come around.
Well, let's let him come all the way. I don't like to say people are starting. Like, I want to see that corner be turned before I start talking about turning the corner.
He hasn't conclusively.
Yeah, exactly.
But it certainly appears as
ways. He's doing work right now, that's for sure.
Speaking of doing work.
The Warriors are doing work.
So, Lux, do you want to go ahead and make that point about the Cavs scored 137? But
right, yeah. So, if I were to, like, it's just inconceivable. This is just craziness to me. Because on a regular night, if the Cavs score 137 points and you hear LeBron has a triple-double, Kevin Love scored 34 in the first quarter, you're like, oh.
Jared Smith broke the three-point.
Yeah, Jared Smith broke the third, passed Dirk Nowitzki on the three-point, like, whatever. Like, you hear that stuff and all of a sudden you're just like, oh, that must have been the best offensive performance of the night. And they couldn't even come within double digits of what the Warriors did to the Lakers because they dropped a hot 149 on them and just, like, monster truck death rolled them, and it was amazing.
Yeah, and you know, we were saying while this game was going on, before, I mean, this was before they had 80 points at the half, but we were saying, like, you know, how do they get these guys to all have touches? Well, you know, Kevin Durant had 28 points, Steph Curry 31, Klay Thompson 26. They got theirs. That they were all fine. They got their shots off. 9 for 14 for Klay, 11 of 18 for Steph, 11 of 15 for Kevin. And then the fourth and most crucial part, right? And besides Steph Curry, the highest plus minus for the game, Draymond Green shot 1 for 6, right? And had 3 free throws made out of 6, right? So he shot 50% from the free throw line and was a plus 30.
Yeah, he played great defense.
Yeah, well, that's it, right? Yeah,
he moved the ball really well, too.
We were talking about how he had an interview recently over the last couple of days where he was like, you know, asked for the 15 billionth time, like, you know, how's it going? You know, you're not scoring as much. You're averaging. He was averaging a little under 11 points going into this game, and now he had 5 in this game. So, you know, that's going to go down even more. It might even be sub double digits, but he was like, you know, as far as individual accolades, like, I'm going to win the Defensive Player of the Year award that I deserve. And I was just like, yeah, man, you get that award.
Right. I mean, and this is what it looks like, right? Like, this is another thing we were talking about earlier. Like, yeah, A, that's the perfect attitude for Draymond to have.
Yeah.
B, we were talking earlier about the fact that you could make the case that the Warriors have the best player at their position 1 through 4.
Yeah. And even though we both probably don't...
I don't think that's true because LeBron exists, but like... Yeah.
And James Harden. But you could make the argument and not be dumb.
Yeah, and even Russell Westbrook. Like, there are other... Yeah. Like, but they're all in the conversation, right? And that's pretty bizonkers. And like this, what they did tonight is like what it looks like when all those players are playing up to their ability.
Yeah, when you... and by the way, you can also argue that Zaza is the worst starting center in the league.
Yeah.
So, like,
Zombie Pachulia was pretty rough stuff tonight.
So, like, someone could, like, tell me that they thought that the Warriors had the 4 best starters at their position and then the worst starter at one position. And I would be like, yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Zaza was a wreck tonight.
Oh, God. And, you know, if you listen to Unguarded Shooting, first of all, thanks. But then you know that Lux and I spent a very long time talking about every single possible big man that could come in for Zaza. Because, I mean, yeah, the Warriors went off for 149 points. They did. They also let the Lakers score 106, even though they were starting, like, Jose Calderon and Ingram. Like, they... Zaza just... I at least was watching Zaza the whole game. And maybe that's not as fun because the Warriors are spectacular and, like, why watch the most boring piece of crap? But every offense possession, I'm watching Zaza and seeing how bad he's going to flub it up and how it just doesn't matter because the Warriors will score with him just standing there. And then on the other side of the court, Zaza,
I was watching him on defense, and it was a disaster. Well, there was the two consecutive layups to Mozgov, and then what was the
jump shots?
Yeah, the two consecutive jump shots he gave up to Mozgov, and then, like, oh, what was it? The, like, utterly embarrassing, like,
he did a lot of embarrassing.
He just got, like, drove on by.
Oh, yeah, I think that was Clarkson.
Yeah, Clarkson just, like, burned him, like, just
to
like,
a finger roll, left hand.
Yeah, just, like, kind of, like, just like went around him, like not in the sort of like cool dribble, open up space, cut the corner, but just like
yeah,
in, the same way you walk around way. Like a tree that's in the way between you and like the restaurant. Like it was legit. Like he was just like, oh, here's a rock. I'll go around it instead of climbing over it to get to grandma's head.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I mean, and I continue to believe that, like, this is a real problem. And we were talking about it. Yeah, this is a team that can score 149 points against really, honestly, any team. Like, if they're going to shoot this way, and, like, yeah, the Lakers aren't the best defensive team. But, I mean, even against a good defense, this would have been 130 points.
Yeah, the way they're playing tonight, like, I could see them hanging 130 on anyone.
Right. Even, like, a great defense. But, like, they can't rely on being able to score 130, 260 points every night necessarily, right? They could do it. They could get into the finals and every game drop 140 on the Cavs and win, right?
Or four out of seven games even. Like they
don't right, exactly. But there are going to be some nights probably where that doesn't happen. And like there's this tiny window left open basically because Zaza's a piece of crap.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's... But that's exactly it. That it's not that this disqualifies them from championship contention. They could definitely win a title with the roster as is. But there's an obvious and isolatable and exploitable weakness on their team.
One might say a Achilles heel.
Yeah, one might.
I would.
Yeah, you know what? A patchouli Achilles heel.
Patchouli's heel.
Welcome to Pachilli's. Would you like our appetizer sampler? But anyways, there's a decided weakness and it's exploitable and they can overcome that. But last year, for instance, like last year's team didn't have an exploitable weakness in the same way. They just suffered from some historically amazing work from LeBron and Kyrie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, they also put Anderson Varejao out there. Like,
made some coaching mistakes and stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff, but like none of that would have mattered if like LeBron and Kyrie hadn't just been
extraordinary. Right. And it wasn't a team composition issue; it was some execution stuff, whatever. But this is like a fundamental roster construction issue.
That's interesting. Like, I'm not sure. I've been thinking about it, right? And like the Cavs look a lot better than they did last year, and the Warriors have a weakness that they didn't have before, like. Yeah. That, I mean, trade
all the young wings on the bench for Cody Zeller.
Yeah, we were talking, like, Cody Zeller would be such a good fit, but he just got that extension. But does the extension kick in right away, or does he still have one more year on his rookie contract? The Hornets aren't going to move Cody Zeller. It doesn't really matter.
I know, but he'd be such a good fit.
Yeah, we were talking about it. Cody Zeller would be so good. Like, he can... He's a really good team defender. Not necessarily the best rim protector, but he's an adequate rim protector.
4.7 screen assists per game.
Yeah.
That's outlandish.
He's a willing passer, but not an incompetent scorer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Zaza's a willing passer, but, like, he...
Mostly out of necessity.
Right, yeah. It's just, like... You either are going to have Zaza playing minutes in the finals, or you're going to have JaVale McGee. Or Varejao, who, by the way, came in and was a lot better than Zaza.
Yeah, JaVale McGee also had the quote of the evening. I don't know if you might have been taking the dog outside because it was like between quarters or like yeah. or something. But someone was interviewing JaVale and they were like, so JaVale, you're getting minutes and Draymond Green was saying they're starting to scout for you. Do you have any, you know, you've got a couple big dunks teams trying to scout for you, watch out. Like, do you have any plans, like, how you're going to adjust to that? And he was like, I guess I'm just going to jump higher. And it's like, yes! I loved it. I thought that was amazing.
I love JaVale.
Yeah, JaVale is one of my favorites of all time.
So do you want to switch over, or actually, I've got one more thing to say about the Warriors, and then you can say whatever you want, but then we'll talk about the Lakers for a little bit and then close up shop.
Sure.
Okay, so last thing, we asked the question at the start of the season, can Ian Clark come into the game and be Leandro Barbosa? And increasingly it appears that yes, he can fill that role.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, tonight he was 7 of 8, 5 5 from 3, 21 points.
5 for 5 from 3.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you said that. You just said it fast.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I'll clarify that one. But yeah, I thought that he did good work, and he's had a couple games like that this year. Like, he yeah. is a viable scoring guard off the bench. And I'll be honest, I can't. This is, I'm not a big fan of Mr. Clark, but he's starting to win me over. I like the way he drives to the rim. He gets into position, and he takes what, you know. He's smart enough to realize that he's playing on a team with so much talent that, like, he doesn't need to hunt for shots because shots are going to fall into his lap. And then all he needs to do is, like, capitalize when they come.
Right.
And he's grown into that, and he's doing a really great job.
And he also can, you know, thrive isn't the right word, but, like, he can make it work if the time comes that it's, like, hunt for shots.
Yeah. No, he can score on his own, but it's sort of detrimental to that squad at a certain point when you're playing that way, except for obviously like sort of emergency situations, but he's smart enough to realize like he can get 20 in a game just off of like the sort of scrap shots that are left after that starting lineup takes all theirs.
Right. When there's like a full bench unit, when the other team's full bench unit is out there and you've got like guys like, I mean, we were just saying nice things about Tim Frazier, but
Frazier.
we'll go with Ish Smith, right? If you're playing like the Pistons and he's squaring up against Ish Smith, like, you know, he could toast Ish Smith.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's like, you know, that's good.
No, he's very solid. We should probably talk about the Lakers.
Right.
They're without D'Angelo Russell tonight. I think they also
Jose Calderon, which was great.
Started Hams Calderon.
Yeah.
I don't think they had Julius Randle either. I'm going to double check myself on that, though, just to be sure.
And while you're double checking on that, Ingram started his first career game, which I think was a very good move by Luke Walton, because the reason why he's not starting right now isn't because he's really bad, because he's probably been better than Luol Deng. The reason he's not starting right now is because Ingram is a featherweight, right? And like,
yeah, like you could punch him in half,
right? Like, and you know, let's say this was a game against the Cavaliers, right? Like Ingram versus LeBron might hurt him. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, if LeBron dunks and Ingram gets knocked over and like LeBron falls on his leg, he would break his leg.
We're talking about almost like a 120-pound difference,
right? Yeah, no, like. Imagine if,
like, you could fit a JJ Barea in the space between like Morant and Ingram and LeBron James.
I mean, you wouldn't want to fit a JJ Barea into Ingram, but you know, you could do it.
It could be done.
Yeah, if Ingram ate JJ Barea,
he'd be the size of LeBron James.
Right. So, like, you don't necessarily want him against the most dominant wings in the game. Fair. But the particular way that Kevin Durant is dominant is A, the way that he could end up being dominant, and B, it's a type of dominance that isn't going to get him killed.
Well, it's I think that's about right. The one place where I differ is I'd say that Durant does sometimes bull rush the rim and play that super aggressive style. That's not his default, and that doesn't come out except for in like urgent moments, you know?
Well, you know, but I think even then, he just, like, puts out his extendo arm and, like, lays it up around. Like, defenders can stay in position, and Kevin Durant will score on them because he's a spider.
Right, but he'll also go through people occasionally, but this was suddenly not one of the games where Kevin Durant needs to put his head down and go through people.
I don't think Kevin Durant goes through
people. He does sometimes.
I think if he has a smaller defender on him, he just shoots over them.
sometimes he'll like get in there when he's feeling nasty.
I guess.
When he's feeling Durant-y nasty.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, like, definitely when he's crashing the boards and stuff.
Yeah, but this was not the kind of game where he needs to get that way, because he was able to just do, to sort of exert his will in the Lakers' defense whenever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
and that kind of Durant game, the kind of Durant game where he's just sort of like floating in the ether and just like appearing to score from anywhere, sort of ex nihilo, is the kind of game that Brandon Ingram could try to emulate.
Right. And that's why I think that, you know, like, it's almost like you have a front row seat to Kevin Durant, because you're the one who he's obliterating.
Right. Like, you get to see.
I mean, I yeah, we're almost done.
Yeah, that was a big one. You get to see that crazy, like, quick release, long arms, how he, like, the utterly insane way Durant plays with angles because of his size.
And Ingram could do that.
Yeah, and Ingram can emulate a lot of that stuff. I don't know if he could be Durant, but he could.
Durant,
the hit band of 2016. But I don't know if Ingram can get to that level, but he can approach that and he can emulate that. And that's like an obvious target for him given his body type and his skill set. And he showed off some stuff tonight. Like, he hit a couple nice fadeaways.
He did.
Had a couple good dribble drives. Played some okay defense, which often just ended with him being like doing a good job denying the paint. And then Durant just like posting up on him and shoving him back 10 feet and then hitting shots over him.
I mean, Ingram is a better defensive player, though, than he is an offensive player at this moment. I mean, he's been like a really good defender in a lot of games. You could not tell tonight when the Warriors dropped 150, though.
Yeah. No, it was brutal. But he showed some things. I thought Clarkson showed some things. Steph Curry and Durant did my dream version of their 2-on-1.
Yeah.
Where Durant goes straight to the rim and draws a defender with him, and Steph stops and pops for a three. Because with the defender running away from the ball, Durant being almost 7 foot tall with long arms and great hops, and Steph being Steph, like, either that three goes in or Durant almost certainly gets the rebound against almost anyone and gets an easy putback. And that just makes so much sense to me as, like, not necessarily a conventional way to run a 2-on-1, but seems like a really reasonable one for those two. And in action, it was exactly that. Curry shot, Clarkson's the one back. There's no way Clarkson gets the rebound over Durant. Durant snagged the rebound, hit an easy two, back the other way.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that, like, the ways that the amount of talent and ability on the team can, like, stretch the confines of what makes basketball make sense, that makes them so exciting.
Like, you're normally not thinking about basketball in terms of how much quicker a ball goes towards the basket than Steph Curry can run, or how it's better to shoot from 35 feet in that example than it is to shoot from 25. Like, you're not supposed to have these thoughts, but the Warriors forces us to be like that little kid in the never-ending story who's riding on the dragon.
Yeah. Well, even just like on a 2-on-1, it's inconceivable, right? To like, or it would, like, 2 years ago, it would have been inconceivable to be like, oh, a pull-up three from 10 feet behind the line.
That's the move.
Is the move on this 2-on-1 opportunity. Right, but it absolutely is, and that just sort of goes to show that, like I said, this Warriors team has the obvious weakness. They have a real lack of interior defense. They don't have a great center. They can get out rebounded really easily, but they can also do stuff like that.
It's like Maury Ball on hallucinogenics.
Yeah, speaking of Maury Ball, it's pretty funny that the most anti-Rocketsy player of all time, DeMar DeRozan, carried his team to a double-digit victory over the Houston Rockets tonight. I'm not going to do that game in depth, but that fact is very funny to me.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll have more time on another episode to talk about the Warriors. I think we're probably going to watch more Warriors
yeah, I mean,
games as the season goes along.
That tends to be a trend.
Yeah, and thanks for being patient, listener. I was in L.A.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I had a good time. Visited some friends, you know. I... girlfriend is in a fashion show.
Nice.
So, do you know that?
I know that's why you went.
Yeah, one of her friends is a designer. So, anyways, I was in LA, you know, so we didn't have an episode for like 4 days, and then it's about to be Thanksgiving, and it'll probably be a couple of days between episodes then, but then, you know, back to regular programming. But for now, I bid adieu.
Adieu. Happy Thanksgiving.
What did you take in college?
what was it? There was some... I don't remember what... I don't remember how I...
We're really tired here, so thanks for listening.
There was some way or another that I BS my way around the language requirement in college. I forget what I did.
Yeah. You know, signing off from Almighty Ballin Studios. Go ahead, follow Lux at ML Surfboard and at Almighty Ballin. That's me, Chris Axman, the host of Almighty Ballin and the co-host of Unguarded Shooting.
Swish. Because we're, or what?
Yeah, Unguarded Shooting, you know, a subdivision of Almighty Ballin, which is a subdivision of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We like to compartmentalize. It helps me cope.
All right, well, on that note, everyone have a happy Thanksgiving.
Check out all the shows on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. They're wonderful.
They'll go great with your traveling to see your family and argue with your uncle about, I don't know, politics or something.
Yeah, it's useful because after Thanksgiving dinner, when you're tired and can't do anything, you can listen to the podcast and close your eyes.
You can listen to this episode where we explain to you why you should be listening to this episode on Thanksgiving. It would all be very meta.
Right. And then also, you can play it really loud during dinner so no one can hear your racist uncle.
Also good.
Or grandfather, probably.
Or anyone.
Or, yeah, everyone can be racist, guys. Remember that.
Keep an eye out.
Yeah, and be the best you that you can be. This was supposed to be a quicker outro than you ended up in.
Yeah, well, we're both tired.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening.
All right. Have fun, everybody.
Yeah. And God bless us all.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.